When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I mean, I suppose it's worth saying there were bloody Protestants who were running the BBC in those days and had a grip on it and really wouldn't allow. There were no Catholics working in the BBC.
Welcome to Free State, everybody. This episode of Free State is brought to you by Dundonald International Ice Bowl. Joe has been ice skating all weekend.
Well, you know it's the national sport of Ulster. Ice skating.
It is. You know, I expect to see a huge uptick. Yeah. When are the Winter Olympics?
I mean, it may be.
Where are the Winter Olympics?
Well, they should be at Dundonald. There may be a 99%. Protestant take up of ice skating, but that's because the Fenians are sectarian bigots.
Just to clarify, this episode of Free State has not been brought to you by Dundonald International Ice Bowl.
Ulster's Nationals.
But keep going.
£75 million of taxpayers' money, but that's fine, you know. And look, it is fine. It's a terrific community. You know, I do understand, you know, that people in the Protestant community, some Catholic people go up there. You know, it's a very, very Protestant loyalist council, very Protestant loyalist area. But, you know, don't begrudge that in the slightest. It is a brilliant community, to be fair. And a lot of people love the Belfast Giants and all the rest of it. No way I had a bit of fun with it. I'm speaking with hard nothing. But, you know, it's great. It's great. And you won't hear anybody in my community complaining about the Dundonald ice
International
bowl.
Ice Bowl.
on the other hand, case in Parkford, Jesus.
Well, we're gonna talk about a few things today, but we did get a pretty big reaction to talking about Case in Park and what it symbolizes. And again, like so many things, there's a reality here and then there is a symbolism, and it seems to be the symbolism. You can call it symbolism. Some people might call it sectarianism, but it's that which is exercising people and driving people to a huge degree to say they don't want this stadium. And we touched upon it, like this idea that, you know, the Euros, like if through sort of self-destructiveness, the Euros don't take part, you know, Northern Ireland is excluded from the European Championships because Casement isn't ready and there's stalling and there's various things. It is a self-inflicted wound on Northern Ireland because there is something. And I can see why I'm totally in favor of, like, as I said before, a lot of people in the South, football people are against having the Euros because they think Irish football has greater priorities. I think you can do both. I think you can have a great tournament that excites people and you can do the nuts and bolts stuff and you can try and do the nuts and bolts stuff and it brings people in. And if you listen to people in Scotland when they had matches there in the European Championships, it brought people into sports and into football that weren't there before. But there's also just that sense of what it would mean for the North to have a game in a state of the art stadium. And yeah, somewhere that is richly symbolic, you know,
exactly. I mean, it's all started in there, you know. I think that the theme is that the old Northern Ireland, you know, the old Protestant Parliament for a Protestant people and all of that, the gerrymandering and the apartheid system, et cetera, you know, it's just breaking down piece by piece by piece. And we see this week, for example, that Alliance Party, which is big up-and-coming middle ground party in the north, you know, made massive electoral gains, were extremely popular. Naomi Long, their leader, is very progressive, very popular. You know, during the week, she said that this is mainly sectarianism, the opposition to Casey. But interestingly, whereas 20 years ago, the Alliance Party was resolutely in favor of the union, the survey last week by Liverpool University shows now that this cascade of younger people who are not interested in the old sectarian politics, who have joined Alliance and who have given it their electoral triumph at the last election, the vast majority of them favour a united Ireland. So, you know, it's just another indication of how things are changing and how the unionists continue to cling to the wreckage. But it's changing. It's changing. So, for example, I believe that Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, in the end, is not a sectarian bigot. And I think that, you know, I think that the deal will be done for Caislean Park. I have no doubt about that. And also, hand in hand, a deal will be done for regional soccer facilities in the north. Because in the north, because of the way things are, there has to be something for everyone in the audience.
But again, even that is, and for the people in the north, that's understandable. That is a divide they understand. But again, to a degree, I suppose, because all these, you know, you've talked about this before, all these sports are played by people across all communities. Soccer is played by everybody. GAA is increasingly played by every, you know, by more and more people in the north on all sides. And ice skating is.
I shouldn't laugh at this. I mean, look, I think a good starting point for the discussion is, and a lot of people have been talking about it, and I think it's fundamental to understand in the north. I mean, John Bridcutt, who was good enough to send you and I the full uncut version of the documentary that we talked about last week, How the BBC Began, one of those episodes concentrates on the censorship of BBC and I, you know, and how they deliberately pursued a very, very sectarian agenda. You know, so, for example, and we'll give some of the details of the documentary. In fact, we might actually be able to make it available online the way it was made available to you and I. But the documentary...
But if you're in the north, you can watch it on the BBC player. And some of us hope that one of the when Ireland, well, if Ireland is united, I would like
TV
to.
Lessons.
I've always felt one of the things that would be, I think, would be a great way of integrating, you know, two parts of the island under a united Ireland would be if the BBC player was made available to everybody in 32 counties. So you wouldn't need, not that anybody I know does this, but you wouldn't need a VPN or a proxy to watch the BBC iPlayer. Because it's a great resource. I know when I lived in London how fantastic it is, and you can watch it there. But carry on, Joe.
I was just saying, we can debate these things. We can discuss them, and we can make certain points. But it's matchless and surprising to hear people who were involved in the censorship of the BBC in the North and broadcasting those lies to the world. You know, broadcasting propaganda to the world, talking about it in such striking terms. I mean, one of the things that you just find it difficult to believe nowadays, in a way, is, you know, senior people who'd gone into the BBC saying how shocked they were that, you know, this regional news service had been there since the 1920s and there wasn't a single Catholic working as a presenter or working
in senior positions
or any managerial position, you know. and saying, you know, looking away, it was as difficult to film in Northern Ireland as it was the Soviet Union.
Even in the regional newsroom at BBC Belfast, the grievances of the Roman Catholic community, whether over housing, employment or voting rights, had little traction.
The day before I walked into the building as a new staff announcer in BBC Belfast, a local paper ran a headline saying, "At last, an appointment from the outside." And I was surprised by this because I hadn't actually really taken on board the fact that I was the first Catholic given a staff job by BBC Northern Ireland, other than a few in engineering, but in production or announcing, I was the first. And they'd been there since the 1920s.
But what is Belfast really like? How does the stranger see us?
Before the troubles began in the late 60s, the BBC's national output, and therefore the British public, seemed blissfully unaware of the divisions in the community.
In a way, it was as difficult to film in Northern Ireland as it was to film in the Soviet Union.
From 1964 onwards, the use of the word Catholic was banned. So you couldn't say the word Catholic. So you couldn't say, look, that very deprived Catholic area. You couldn't denote the community that was being discriminated against. None of that could be mentioned. And as one of the senior execs says, he says, look, I suppose, he says, it's worth saying the bloody Protestants were running the place, you know. And
the extraordinary thing about that, to give some context in the documentary, is because the documentary deals in part with what happened when, you know, the BBC, all these mavericks, and it's very similar in a way to what we've talked about when we talked about RTE, that they're all over the BBC in the 60s in London and across the, you know, Britain. There were people just creating just iconoclastic, rebellious, fascinating programs. Like, there's a fantastic bit in the documentary about David Dimbleby making a program about Harold Wilson, who had just lost the election, and Edward Heath had become prime minister, and Harold Wilson was now the leader of the opposition, and how crazy Wilson went when he discovered that the title of the documentary was Yesterday's Men, which had been a slogan that the Labour Party had used about the Tories, but he felt it was
Wasn't the contrast the fact that England wasn't a colony? We were a colony, and therefore were treated sinister way, like, you know.
Well, it was being treated. Except the people who wanted to change, the people who were trying to report it differently, were the people coming from London.
Martin Bell, people like that. But Dennis Toohey. Dennis Toohey said, whenever he, they wouldn't let him come cover a story which he assumed that he was going to be given because he was a Catholic and he'd come from here, and he wasn't allowed to go, and instead they sent I'll do this the other way around. So they sent a pair out who came absolutely curious, didn't know anything about the Norse, and put together a documentary that was, you know, extraordinarily in its way honest and eye-opening, you know, because they didn't know anything about the North, and it was their sort of sense of surprise and shock at what was going on here. And at one stage, the lady asks a very prominent unionist politician about the gerrymandering where, you know, Catholics were being denied the vote. And she said to him, I mean, would one man, one vote not be more democratic? And he said to her, well, it might be more democratic, but I'm simply not in favour of that.
In Londonderry, it is the ratepayers who had the vote. Do you not think that it's more democratic to have one man, one vote, rather than going on householders?
No, I don't. But when you say more democratic, it might be more democratic. But I'm not in favour of it.
And whatever they went back, of course, it all completely backfired because it was a much more honest broadcast that was sent back to the mainland, you see. And it backfired badly because as the presenter of the program said, you know, this unionist politician, whenever the program was broadcast, was in a rage and made a formal complaint to the BBC that he'd been asked questions by a woman and a black man was in charge.
After it had been transmitted, I got a call from a source in BBC Belfast. A unionist leader in Derry phoned the head of programmes, and she would have been, my source, would have been the person who would have had to listen in on the call. And he was incensed at the interview that he just had to do, and he said, BBC London sent two people had never been to Northern Ireland before. They never knew the place. There was a woman who asked me the questions. And there was a black man who said he was in charge.
Because your producer was a black man.
A black South African called Arthur Maimene.
Oh, my God, like a black South African, you know. And of course, you know, there's the humour of that nowadays. But it was deeply sinister.
It told of the suffocating kind of grip that small-minded people had. I think that's as much and sectarian people whatever.
That's not right. It's not the suffocating grip of small-minded people. That's like saying, you know, well, there were a few rotten apples. This was the system, the daily system that we lived under. It was structural. It was systematic. And it was overwhelming. I mean, there were no contrary voices in the unionist community. Mm. I mean, this was a system of apartheid and oppression that operated against my community. You know, and I think in a way, the story of the BBC and that suppression of reality and the way we were treated segues into Casement Park, because picking up from where we started on this episode. I mean, something that I had just taken for granted that people knew. And after we played a clip from Martin Bell in the previous podcast, I got a lot of texts and phone calls from people saying, did that actually happen? So I'll just explain that for the listener. In 1971, Casement was, you know, a thriving GA grounds. There was a thriving social club. You know, there were all sorts of activities taking place there. It was used by a lot of the local clubs in Belfast. It was used for big Ulster Championship matches, etc. And in 1971, whenever the British began Operation Motorman, which is where just Catholic men from all over the north were taken and held hostage, essentially. They were detained without charge or trial for several years. But at that point in time, the British Army simply moved in, took over Casement Park, unfurled the barbed wire, the machine gun posts, and turned it into a British Army headquarters. And that was the end of Gaelic football there. They occupied it for over a year as a very grim outpost post overlooking West Belfast. You know, during the time whenever the mass shootings of Catholics began. You know, the Ballymurphy massacre, Bloody Sunday, the White Rock massacre. And that was just the way things were.
The army in Belfast has completed its main operation, but is keeping and even tightening its grip on the city. This is being done with a strong force not so much on the streets as overlooking the streets. And bases established yesterday were strengthened today. At Casement Park, the Gaelic football ground on the edge of Andersonstown, the gunners were securing their grandstand headquarters with sandbags and with wire. This is one of the places where, among some sections of the community, the army's takeover is not at all popular, for there'll be no more football at Casement Park for a while, and this was a social centre too, whose use is now denied to local people.
We did not have Belfast Gaels, Antrim Gaels no longer had Casement Park. You know.
Mm.
And
Operation Motorman, it happened. It was Operation Motorman was launched, I think, about 10 days after Bloody Friday, I think, and that was the impetus too, and that was, you know, the IRA bomb which killed, I don't know how many people did that kill. I mean, those bombs that went off in Belfast, number of bombs, wasn't it?
But this is an important context to put in.
It's not an important context. It really isn't an important context.
Why not?
Because, you know, any resistance movement is going to resist. I take your point. You know, it's horrifying and all the rest of it. But it's not important context, because this had been going on in the North since 1920. As they discussed it, as these, you know, British sort of grandees in the BBC discussed it in the documentary, which we've been talking about, this had been going on since the 1920s. You know, this was systematic apartheid. And if the British Army wanted to shoot someone, well, then they shot them. If the RUC wanted to petrol bomb houses, maybe 120 of them burned to the ground in West Belfast at the start of the Troubles. And you can still see the old video footage of the RUC men throwing petrol bombs through the windows of Catholic family homes. You know, that was just the way things were. And, you know, the point about that, of course, is that inevitably, eventually, there had been various uprisings, you know, the 50s campaign, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I mean, it was inevitable. It's the history of it's the history of human beings. You know, if the foot's on their neck and they're being treated with oppression, well, there's going to be resistance. A certain number of people are going to take to the gun. That's precisely what happened. You know, it happened everywhere in every British colony, every single one of them. And the psychological damage and problems that they caused all over the world are there to this day. You know, from colonies all around the world, we were no different. You know, the only difference is, I suppose, that you know, we're now in our phase of coming well out of that and moving towards a very, very, very good future. But anyway, case from part. So to understand case from part, it's another, in a way, I suppose, if you were an outsider, not me, obviously, because I think the Casement Park project is brilliant. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a brilliant facility for big rugby games, big soccer games, you know, Ulster Championship. It's going to be a brilliant amenity for all the GAA clubs, not just in Antrim, but in the North. You know, there's going to be all sorts of activity there. It's going to be part of an economic regeneration of Belfast, you know, and it's going to be a centerpiece for tourists coming to see this magnificent stadium, et cetera, et cetera. But the only reason that this came about was because the multi-sport stadium that the GA 100% backed at the Mays was destroyed by unionists. I'll just give you a wee bit of history on that. Tony Blair was very, very keen on it. He saw the great potential for it. There's 350 acres on the old Mays prison site, you know, a place of terrible, terrible infamy. And what happened was the UK government, because the sporting bodies here needed a proper state-of-the-art stadium, the GAA badly needed one. Ravenhill was pretty decent, but they could have been doing with a bigger stadium. Not that they would have filled it that often, but it would have been very good for them, very useful for them to have it as an economic driver as well, because the projections around it were absolutely enormous. I'll come back to those in a minute. And so what happened was the stadium was going to cost $300 million around about 2008. Ian Paisley, Dr. Paisley, was very much in favour of it. He was very close to Martin McGuinness. And Dr. Paisley was also very close to Edwin Poots. And Edwin was very much in favour of it. And Dr. Paisley had appointed him as the Minister for Culture and Sport. So it was Edwin's project. And it was going to be a 40,000 all-seater stadium, right, on the site outside Lisburn, right? And you just think about this. It was going to be a shared national stadium for our three main sports, soccer, rugby, Gaelic football. Okay.
and ice skating, an ice skating rink in the basement. Four main sports.
Yeah. And so, and what happened was, immediately, as Edmund described it, you know, dark forces are against me. And what you were going to have here was a stadium, right? A magnificent stadium shared by the three main sports. What a symbol of reconciliation, like what a symbol of togetherness for all of us. Fully paid for. There was going to be an economic regeneration plan around it. So there were going to be commercial units as well that were estimated to bring in revenue of 800 million by the Northern Ireland Chamber of Commerce. There was going to be a peace and reconciliation centre on the site of the ghoulish old hitch blocks. You know, it was a win-win for everyone. And the GAA were 100% behind it. And the unionists destroyed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Destroyed it. Dr. Paisley was destroyed by the DUP, by forces within the DUP, not Edwin Putz, because he was perceived to be too close to Martin McGuinness and Sinn Féin, the Chuckle Brothers and all of that. Paisley was deposed and Peter Robinson was brought in. Peter is a very secular person. I know his past isn't great, but you know, I mean, we all grow, we all learn and we all grow. And Peter was very keen to be a first minister for everybody. But when Peter came in, pragmatism meant that the new national stadium would have to go. And just think about what a shame that was. Enormous on-site park. The M1 motorway on one side, the M2 motorway on the other side. Easy access right beside the international airport, beside the train. I mean, it was a dream. It was an absolute.
But also it being a stadium for every sport is huge.
Absolutely. Like it's just something that we could all celebrate and enjoy and a sense of togetherness and, you know, like all sports are here. And I think it was Edwin who said, I'm pretty sure it was Edwin who said, wouldn't it be great? He said, you know, we have, you know, our rugby. A massive rugby international game on a Friday night, you know, a soccer international on a Saturday and an Ulster Championship final on a Sunday. Mm. And the idea was that the three sports bodies would share the revenue. You know, there would be a company set up to run the Mays site, you know, with two representatives from each of the main sports plus an independent chairman, you know. Money was going to be thrown at it. But what happened, of course, you know, Jim Allister, who was in the DUP at the time, he started the campaign. He stood out beside the Mays with a sledgehammer in his hand and they, let's smash this terrorist project, you know. We will not have a national stadium near a shrine to terrorists. And so they they did what they always did. You know, they shot themselves in the foot. And the Northern Ireland football fans, the Northern Ireland supporters clubs were resolutely opposed to it. And what happened? They lost the Olympics. We were going to get a slice of the London Olympics at the new national stadium. Lost that. You know, we stayed in the backwater. And instead then, what happened was the GAA had to put together a new initiative, bringing Ulster Rugby and the IFA with us to create the three new grounds. And, you know, and here we are again. I mean, at the recent Northern Ireland game at Windsor, you can shove your casement park up your hole. You can shove your casement park up your hole. I mean, like...
Up your arse.
No, up your hole, they sang. And the point about it is this. Yeah, you're painstakingly polite. You're just too polite for me.
I'm just trying to be exact. I think it was probably...
Yes, you can show over your Casement Park and you're no Casement Park and all that. And just think about that. As a hosting nation, which we would be, Northern Ireland would qualify for the Euros, which is the only way Northern Ireland will qualify. The only way they would qualify for the Euros. I'm like, wouldn't it be absolutely brilliant? They'd have like three games there, or at least one or two games there. You know, be absolutely brilliant. You know, it'll be used as a driver for everybody. Jarlath Burns, the president of the GAA, has already said we're opening up to all sport.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the Windsor Park capacity is very limited. You know, Irish Rugby could come and play games at the new stadium. Ulster Rugby could have bigger occasions there than they can have in Ravenhill, which is obviously perfect for their numbers. But, you know, here we are again. And like, I think back to the Casement Project, which was an awful disappointment. I mean, Danny Murphy.
The Mays Project.
The Mays Project. I mean, Danny Murphy, the legendary president of Ulster GA, who was a very, very close friend of Edwin Putz. Ryan Feeney, who was the greatest single asset the GA in Ulster ever had. You know, he's now VP at Queen's University. You know, a guy who is, you know, a heavyweight all around the world, you know, who knows presidents and prime ministers, who's an expert in strategy, you know, who was the GAA's first ever lobbyist, you know, who worked relentlessly with my father to put floodlights into every GAA ground in the north.
Mm.
You know, who was the one who initiated the civil action under the Government of Ireland Act to force the government here to start funding GAA, which had never been funded, completely neglected, you know, and who haven't had the maze thing destroyed, then put together this fabulous idea of, okay, look, well, here's what we'll do then. Look, well, let's, you know, we've got to move on here. We'll build a new Ravenhill. We'll build a new Windsor Park, and we'll build a Casement, you know, and that way, we will make up for what has happened. You can never make up for what has happened because it was a brilliant idea. I mean, do you know what happened with the Mays Stadium? And whenever Peter Robinson came in, appointed Gregory Campbell, sacked Edwin as his sports minister, Edwin was absolutely devastated. He was absolutely devastated at the time, you know. And the DUP...
What happened to the Mays?
The DUP offered the site to the Royal Ulster Agricultural Society for its annual agricultural show.
Fair enough.
And also suggested not an ice rink, but a motorcycle racetrack.
Ah, yeah.
Because a motorcycle racetrack was fine. I remember at the time the Irish Football Association's chief executive, Howard Wells, who knew what this was going to do, who knew how this was going to transform things in the north, and who could see the economic potential. He was gutted. You know, and he talked about this, you know, self-defeating nonsense of unionism, you know. And Edwin claimed that dark forces were working against him, which they were. And Terence Brannigan, who was the chairman of the corporation's board, he said that their estimate of the economic potential was to deliver around 800 million in investment and up to 14,000 jobs. In February 2022, the chief executive of the Strategic Investment Board of the North, a guy called Brett Hannum, told a Stormont committee that the site has absolutely massive economic development potential. And what's there now? Tumbleweed, just like Case, you know. And this is, as Naomi Long said, this is sectarianism, plain and simple.
Well, there's a piece.
All these ultra unionists, and it's like, oh, you know, Robbie Butler, who's Doug Beattie's right hand man, right? They weren't asking any questions about the Dundonald Ice Bowl or about the Windsor Park redevelopment, you know, about the Aviva. But now all of a sudden, these public monies, we must, you know, in conscience, you know. And I tweeted during the week to Robbie Butler, because, you know, their slogan is Union of People. I tweeted to Robbie during the week after he'd had, you know, a series of criticisms, questions of the Gaysman Park project, which they're all piling into now, you know. I mean, it's so pathetic.
Mm.
Really is pathetic. I said to him, Robbie, is the GAA community part of your union of people? Answer came there, none. I then tweeted him, Robbie, do you support the Gaysman Park project? Answer came there, none. You know. And Doug Beattie should be putting his weight behind this as well. But he's not. He's not. And instead of leading their people, I said this before to you, whenever all this nonsense blew up about the protocol and it was going to bring down the north and it was a disaster and, you know, the gunmen were going to come out in the streets again about this invisible sea border that, you know, everybody in East Belfast and the village in Belfast and, you know, the Shankill Road, they were up in arms. They couldn't eat. They couldn't sleep. They were waking up in the middle of the night. Jesus, that invisible sea border. Oh, my God. Jesus Christ, am I? You know, they were.
Won't someone think of our sausages? We want Lincolnshire sausages.
That's right. The bloody we're never going to be able to get our sausages in Maisie. Maisie, oh, Jesus. Don't ask about Maisie at the garden centre at Donegan. They won't be able to get her Christmas. They won't get her Christmas. There's a bloody vegetable seawater.
Back to square one, because of the garden centres. Back to 1969.
And I don't know if you remember, but I think it was one of the most harrowing stories about the whole invisible sea border saga. But please forgive me. I seem emotional. I don't know if you remember. A special commemorative. King Charles. Queen Camilla shortbread was made.
Don't tell me this. Don't tell me this. Didn't what?
They weren't able to send it to Elgin.
The shortbread didn't make it.
And Maisie had ordered some for the canteen in the garden centre. Oh, Jesus. She was on BBC Northern Ireland. This is not an exaggeration. I don't know if her name is Maisie.
Life isn't fair.
Garden Centre woman really and Donna Hadid, and they had her on every other week.
Hmm.
Oh, we weren't able to get our red, white, and blue tins this year from Derbyshire. And then we see, you know, well, all of a sudden, oh, everything's fine. You know, the invisible sea border, is it there? Is it not there? When it's invisible, it is hard to see, to be fair. And life goes on as normal.
Hamilton.
Great fun, you know, playing for Northern Ireland. I really enjoyed it.
Good luck to the Northern Ireland team. Good luck to all the lads.
On behalf of the people of Strabane.
On behalf of all the people in Northern Ireland.
Ballymena.
Banbridge.
Limavady.
Ballybinvady.
Dungannon.
Craw. McLean.
Cookstown. Sizzleglen.
Newton Ord,
Lurgan,
Moy Park Chicken Arms.
The Titanic Center. Moy Park Chickens are right behind you.
Let's bring my cup home.
And that is the situation.
Best of luck in this year's Euros.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.